Ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, life after death. You'll hear great thinkers on these subjects and more on the Paranormal Podcast, the longest running podcast of its type. I'm Jim Harold, and I invite you to join me as we explore the mysteries of life. I bet you love these topics just as much as I do, but don't worry, I won't tell anyone. Join me for some great paranormal conversation. Listen on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today is Friday, June 5th, 2020. On this day in 1960, three teenagers were brutally murdered at Lake Bodom in Espoo, Finland. 18-year-old Nils Gustafsson survived the attack, but he was unable to identify the assailant, leaving police with a laundry list of confusing evidence and no solid suspects. Welcome to Today in True Crime, a Parcast original. Today we're covering the murder of three Finnish teenagers on a camping trip just outside Helsinki. Let's go back to the shores of Lake Bodom during the first hours of June 5th, 1960. Fifteen-year-olds Myla Irmeli Björklund and Anja Tulike Mäki cuddled up next to their 18-year-old boyfriends, Nils Wilhelm Gustafsson and Seppo Antero Boisman. The four of them were sipping beers around a small campfire near the lakeshore. The quiet murmur of the water made the moment all the more romantic. They laughed over fond memories, played a few games, and continued to down their liquor. But before they knew it, it was long past midnight and a chill was settling into the summer air. The four teenagers decided it was time to stamp out their fire and retire back to their tent. A few hours later, around 6 a.m., a couple of young boys on a birdwatching expedition passed by the campsite. From a short distance away, they could make out the couple's tent and the fact that it appeared to be torn and tattered. Odd. Odd enough for the boys to take note of the tall, blonde-haired man walking away from the site. Still, the state of his tent was none of their business. The boys continued on their way. Then, around 11 a.m., a carpenter named Risto Seren got closer to the scene. What he found was far more horrific than a few rips or tears. Seren immediately called the police, who arrived at the lake around noon. Inside the tent, they found two of the teens, Mäki and Boisman. Each had multiple stab wounds and appeared to have been bludgeoned with a club or other heavy object from outside of the tent. Björklund and Gustafsson, meanwhile, were both found outside and on top of the tent, as if they had crawled out in an effort to escape. Björklund's body was naked from the waist down. Like Mäki and Boisman, she had been stabbed multiple times in an attack that forensics believed must have continued well after her death. But Gustafsson, unlike his companions, was still alive. The 18-year-old had a badly broken jaw, a few bruises, and a concussion, but he didn't appear to be stabbed. As he was rushed to the hospital, the police began to gather evidence from the scene. They could tell that the victims had been dead for nearly 6 hours before they arrived, which means the birdwatchers may have just missed the attack. The teens' motorcycles were still parked at the site, but the keys were now missing. Gustafsson's shoes also seemed to have disappeared, until one detective found them about a half mile from the tent, along with other pieces of Gustafsson's clothing. And finally, there was no murder weapon found at the scene. It was a strange collection of facts, one the police struggled to parse. In their confusion, they also failed to secure the crime scene properly. Search parties and passersby tramped across the site, attempting to aid the floundering investigators. But they were little help, and in fact only succeeded in causing more chaos by trailing around extra footsteps. As for Gustafsson, he was in such despair over the event and so badly injured that police didn't consider him a suspect at the time, but they did question him about what he saw. Whether the boy was still in shock or stating a fact, it's hard to say, but Gustafsson's answer was as bone-chilling as the murder itself. He claimed that he had seen a shadowy figure dressed in black, and the creature's eyes were red and glowing when it attacked. Coming up, all the suspects in the Lake Bodum triple murder. And now, back to the story. On June 5th, 1960, three Finnish teenagers were killed in the early morning by the shores of Lake Bodum, just outside Helsinki. Their fourth companion managed to walk away injured, but with his life, 18-year-old Nils Gustafsson. After the murders, local police were criticized for their poor handling of the case. Not only did they forget to cordon off the crime scene, which became overrun with spectators and tampered evidence, they also failed to file the proper paperwork on their findings. The only thing they could do to rectify their lack of professionalism was find the killer. The police's first suspect was a local kiosk operator named Valdemar Gailstrom. Those who frequented Lake Bodum knew Gailstrom as a man with a hostile temper. Over the years, he'd been seen cutting tents, throwing stones at passing hikers, and making other unsavory choices. Gailstrom was questioned by the police on several occasions following the Lake Bodum triple murder, but they could find no concrete connection between him and this particular crime. Gailstrom walked free. 9 years after the murders, Gailstrom was found dead in Lake Bodum from what was presumed to be suicide. The next suspect was Hans Assmann, who was rumored to be an ex-KGB spy. Assmann was a recluse who lived along the shores of Lake Bodum and had already been suspected in a handful of other murders. He also fit the birdwatcher's description of the blonde-haired man leaving the victim's tent. And after that description was released in the papers, Assmann changed his hairstyle, causing further suspicion. Most incriminating of all, however, was the fact that on June 6, 1960, a day after the attacks, Assmann had checked into Helsinki Surgical Hospital. He was acting anxious and violent and appeared to have bloodstains on his shirt. But the police did not arrest Assmann. They claimed he had a solid alibi. What that alibi was is still unclear, and it's possible that Assmann's political connections and involvement with the KGB protected him from real scrutiny. Still, he was the last suspect that police had appeared to investigate until 2004, when finally, after 44 years, authorities made their first arrest in connection with the case. Nils Gustafsson. While 44 years earlier, Gustafsson's injuries and apparent grief had protected him from suspicion, improvements in forensic technology had led to a new revelation in the case. Gustafsson's shoes, found half a mile from the site of the murder, were covered in the blood of all three victims, but not his own. This led authorities to believe that Gustafsson may have murdered his three friends in a fit of jealous rage. Then, after committing the crime, he went into the woods to discard the shoes. Finally, he bludgeoned himself to make it look like he, too, was a victim in the attack. At Gustafsson's trial, a brand new witness came forward, adding texture to this version of events. She claimed that on June 5, 1960, she was camping at Lake Bodum 2, at a site neighboring the crime scene. Late in the evening before the murder, she saw Gustafsson and his friend Boysman fighting near the red glow of their fire. Gustafsson, she said, appeared to be severely intoxicated. Police surmised that Gustafsson's fractured jaw may have been the result of a drunken altercation, after which Gustafsson was exiled from the group's tent for the night. He returned in the early hours of the morning, still enraged, and took the lives of his three friends. But there were a few problems with the evidence for this theory. Gustafsson's lawyer pointed out that her client's blood had been on the inside of the tent, meaning he was likely attacked inside like the others. She also called the legitimacy of eyewitness testimony during a 2005 trial into question. Why had she failed to come forward with her story for 45 long years? The witness had an explanation. She claimed that she and the friends she was camping with that June night swore they would take their secrets to the grave. But when she was questioned about the identities of these so-called friends, she was unable to recall any of their names. Her testimony, according to the defense, didn't hold much water. But the most important problem with the prosecution's case was Gustafsson's jaw. It had been so severely battered that the injury would have required a very violent fistfight, one that would make it challenging to commit three murders shortly after. Ultimately, the jury acquitted Gustafsson. There simply wasn't enough solid evidence to convict the man or anyone else. 60 years after the murder, police seemed to be no closer to finding the killer than they were the day of the crime. Instead, the story's become part of modern-day Finnish folklore. It's remembered as a tragedy and a tale of strange facts and elusive suspects. But perhaps most of all, it's remembered for Gustafsson's story about that set of glowing red eyes in the darkness, poised to attack. Thanks for listening to Today in True Crime. I'm Vanessa Richardson. For more fascinating stories about hard-to-crack criminal cases, check out Parcast Original, Not Guilty. Today in True Crime was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound designed by Dick Schroeder, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Joshua Kern. This episode of Today in True Crime was written by Lori Gottlieb, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle. I'm Vanessa Richardson.